Hey, I'm Andrew Coates. I am the host of the Live Free and Die Hard podcast. And today I'm joined by Paul Ravella. He is the founder of Pro Physique Coaching. He's got a master's in business. And we're going to have a conversation a lot about the role of his peers, kindred spirits, people in the industry, like his good friend, Dr. Lane Norton, who have been major inspirations and important to his success. We're also going to talk a lot about how he went from being a solo coach to building a business, hiring coaches around him, and how that's led him to greater opportunity and success. Stay tuned. Thank you. Paul Ravella. Well, it's great to have you on. I've actually been following your stuff for a while. I've been familiar with you since Lane Norton is a really good friend of yours. And Lane has been talking about you and waving you around for years. I've obviously been, you know, dove into a lot of Lane's stuff. We spoke at an event together a year and a half ago. He's been a major influence on me. So that's how I came upon you. And if Lane is endorsing someone like to that level, that speaks very highly about them. So it's great to have you on. You and I ran into each other at the Olympia, at the night show. You know, you're there with Brett Contreras. So I've known Brett for a long time and happy to be with him. It's like, oh shit, there we go. I know who you are. So it's
great. I have the benefit of walking in some cool circles, but I've always tried to like learn from various experts, you know, when you're trying to learn something. So I've connected with a lot of these guys just for that reason.
This is where I really wanted to go with this. Like, I'm in Edmonton, Alberta, and I've got plenty of trainer friends in the industry here, but I haven't necessarily found there are many people, there's a couple who I would consider to be kindred spirits, who I talk to on a regular basis, commiserate over goals and ambitions. My former podcast co-host, Dean Guido, great friend of mine. And Dean is doing great things in the industry, but he's, you know, he's a family guy. You know, his focus is not on, you know, brand development and traveling a ton. I drag him out to stuff. So what I guess I wanted to ask was like, how important has this been to you to have those kind of peers as friends in the industry? You know, the value of having them geographically very close to you or to travel. Like, I want to hear your thoughts on that. What it's done for you.
I mean, if you reverse engineer a career, you know, there's a lot of things that fell into place that I never necessarily would have planned for. Like when people are like, oh, how do I get to where you're at? I'm like, it's not a possible scenario, right? Like I couldn't graph it out for you because it all started with my obsession with like lifting and bodybuilding. And, you know, from a young age in high school, I was always interested in it. And it eventually led to the internet and finding bodybuilding.com and a video series by Lane Norton called Life of a Natural Pro. They should have that video series on YouTube somewhere. But it was like a weekly video series, and it just was Lane coaching someone named Tommy Jeffers all the way to the bodybuilding stage. And it just showed me a side of bodybuilding that I didn't know existed. I thought I had to look like, you know, Ronnie Coleman or Dorian Yates or Jay Cutler to do a bodybuilding show. In fact, I'd never even been to a bodybuilding show. And then when I started watching the series, I ended up going to a show and going like, oh my gosh, there's normal people here. In fact, nobody looks like those guys. Those guys are, you know, the anomalies, not the norm. And so, you know, I eventually hired Lane to do my first show. And I think this was very early on in Lane's coaching career. In fact, he was still in grad school. So our communication wasn't very robust, but I was very adamant like about asking him questions. And I tracked him down at the Arnold my first year going to the Arnold. And I think he just saw my enthusiasm. And he moved to Tampa where I grew up. Yeah. So that sparked a whole nother thing because as his career was taking off, I guess he was looking for help. You know, I would help him. Like he would do these camps and seminars. I would offer to drive the bus. I got to meet some of my like idols and heroes. And then our wives became friends. And then it was like this, our whole lives became entangled between kids. And then I was literally traveling the globe with him, speaking at events from Australia to the UK to Canada. So, that's really how I got my start. It was my passion, just kind of getting more and more involved in it. And it took me a long time to quit my job because I had a good career. But, you know, at Lane's suggestion, he was like, you should really try coaching. You know, I thought I would have a knack for it. And I think he was right.
There's some really cool parallels there. Real quick, I started out really getting serious about working out at 24. Now I'm 45. And one of my old university friends is Frank McGrath, who is a fairly
Oh,
iconic
yeah.
pro bodybuilder. So
Forearms.
the best forearms in the world, right? And I actually got to see him. I hadn't seen him in a very long time, but I got to see him at the Olympia, at the not far away from where I ran into you. A great human being, really inspiring story. So that was sort of part of my introduction. I grew up on the bodybuilding magazine. So that larger than life figure was there for me, but I never got interested in competition. But I started a career at 32. So later in life, got into this stuff after lifting for years. But I had the good fortune of starting out in a company where like you got exposed to Lane stuff. I got into Lane's video logs pretty early. So that was my introduction to evidence-based nutrition, dove in, drank the Kool-Aid. But as on the personal training side, I started lifting, reading T Nation very early on. And then within
I was
this
on there.
company, yeah, there you go, right? And it inspired me literally to start writing for them later. So I've written for them for, 4.5 years. But there's this guy named Dean Somerset, who was I was reading his stuff on T Nation, and I'm like, wait a second, there's a Dean Somerset who's on the company session totals, and it's the same guy. So I got to do a lot of internal con ed with Dean, and then did a lot of his seminars, paid stuff outside of it, and a conference that we hosted together, and he was one of my original partners in 2019, but he was one of our speakers in 2023. So he's around now. Dean and I don't like sit down and have coffee and jam over this stuff. We live in different parts of the city, but he's always been a significant influence. So it's cool to see. And you had, obviously it's great to see what Lane is doing now. He's creeping up on, I just looked yesterday by chance, he's like 950,000 Instagram followers. Like he's creeping up on 1 million. He'll hit that soon. It's good to see the kind of mainstream impact he's having, but we sometimes forget the fact that you look at some of the people in the industry, you, Soheili is another really good example, who in a very big way have been influenced by or had a bit of a launching pad through Lane's media.
Yeah, I always think of it like, they show the NFL like coaching, tree, all the coaches that came from one coach. You'll see them, and that's kind of how Lane is. Lane's had an influence on, I was probably one of the first generations of coaches to come from that. Now there's people that are coaching either under me or have been my clients. So that information does get filtered down through the years. And I think, the percentage of evidence-based coaches when I started, I mean, I had to defend myself, on macros when I first started coaching. People didn't understand. Now, if you give somebody a meal plan, they immediately call you a charlatan, right? I think, and there's the truth is somewhere in the middle, but the idea is that the accepted dogma for success, especially in my given field, which I have narrowed myself into this very tiny realm of the bodybuilding world called the bikini division, but like knocking down barriers that were, I was told from day one, you'll never have a girl win an overall and turn a pro, go to the Olympia, blah, blah, and I've just continuously knocked those things down. And now no one bats an eye if you tell someone that you do macros in your competitor. But that was really a knock for a long time. So it's cool to see that, there is an evolution there in the sport.
I mean, I would absolutely consider you to be one of the figures that's been most prominent in that movement, obviously bikini competitor coaching, but natural bodybuilding and all this. And I would liken you to the same kind of tier and time frame as Eric Helms and 3DMJ. Obviously, Lane has been a, a
Oh,
central.
me and Eric were competing at the same time in like 2006, 2007 together. Like I've actually met Eric multiple times through those forums, but he went by Equel, which was his like dance battle rap battle dance name, like which the guy can dance and rap. But like yeah, so those guys are very much, Alberto and Eric, and those guys are very much like we have this weird camaraderie. Because we were all posting our workouts and commenting, back then it was all the threads, right? You'd go in the workout section of the, I think it was Natural Body, but I forget what section. And you'd literally go, Rob Moran, Derek Charlebois, Mark, from Sivation, Mark Loebliner, all the Sivation guys. And then, every now and then Doug Miller would be on there. Dominic D'Agostino would be in there. So like all those names, when I see them, we beeline it for each other and we get caught up and it's great.
Dom's another one, Dom D'Agostino, who I found out about through Lane again. I guess Dom is one of what preeminent keto guys, if I'm remembering correctly.
Oh, he's one of the world's leading researchers on keto to the point where they, I don't know what I'm allowed to say because I'm not that close with Dom anymore. I mean, he lives here in Tampa, but I mean, at one point they were talking about sending him up on the space shuttle He was doing underwater missions because, you know, they were looking at ketogenic diet as a solution for long-term nutrition because the food weighs less. Or so, like, he's on that level. Like, he's trying to solve cancer. Yeah, and he's an absolute mutant of a human. Like, he just makes you feel bad about yourself. He's so strong. So nice. Yeah.
That's one of the fun things about being around our industry is you're walking around and, you know, hanging out with people. Dr. Mike Isertel, Nick Shaw, the guys from RP, you know, their whole crew, their friends, they're wonderful. You know, you get a guy like Mike walk around, just an absolute titan. And yeah, our industry is fun like that. And I've really enjoyed over the years just the deep-rooted connections that have come. And again, those like-minded people, or, you know, a lot of the names that we're throwing around are people that I've considered to be, you know, industry leaders and mentors more than peers per se. But it's been fun to see the evolution of all this stuff. And I think for a lot of coaches listening, one thing I actually do try to encourage is I try to connect like-minded coaches who I feel like are on similar places along their journey. So that way they're not necessarily, like, I always use the analogy, they're not trying to, like, get Eric Cressy's attention, because Cressy's a little busy with other shit, right? But is to, you know, support and help people along the way. Because as my media and brand has really kind of skyrocketed the last few years, I've got a lot of great old friends who've been very supportive, and I do try to help and support where I can. But, like, their support along the way has actually been really critical to a lot of those fortuitous opportunities, like getting introductions to certain writing things, for example, or speaking engagements. That came from friends I made along the way.
Right. Same thing. That's everything to do with Lane. Like, all the people that I mentioned, even one of my longtime business partners, Lauren Conlon, I met her at one of the camps, right? You know, so, like, you know, like, these are, you don't know it at the time. You're just showing up to an event looking to make friends, and you don't realize that these are going to be lifelong connections. But looking back, it's a pretty easy transition, because you realize you have a huge bond in the thing that you're excited about. Whereas, like, most of us, there's nobody in our family, in our gym, in our city that has the same, like, kind of focus and excitement around this stuff that we do.
Yeah. Again, like, Edmonton has such a thriving community, but I find that it is tricky to find that person that you want to sit down and, like, spend a lot of time with and just really get into the weeds of. I think it's the drive and the ambition to do, you know, the kind of stuff that I find myself getting opportunities to do, which is why, you know, today I'm messaging back and forth with Luca Hosevar. And I don't know if you must know Luca. And he's doing amazing things in the industry. If you don't, I want you to connect with him. And, you know, we're talking about his event and creating opportunities for each other for writing stuff. I brought Luca into a bunch of writing things, but this guy is everywhere and a really big figure and exploding in the industry. So, you know, it's those kind of people I find you get the greatest amount of inspiration to go, wait a minute, I got a little bit more here. I think early in my career, I found you set limits based on working. I worked in a commercial gym environment. So I think a lot of coaches, they have this, like, limiting belief about what you can do. And then the more of these disconfirming examples of people, Lane being a very high level one, but Lane can also seem larger than life. But when you get in front of him one-to-one, he's actually a really sweet, giving, wonderful person. But I've met so many of these people I read on T-Nation and found through all these other outlets that you realize that the vast majority, there are exceptions, are actually very sweet, grounded, wonderful, normal people, right?
Oh, well, I mean, success leaves clues. And I think that's the one cool thing about, you know, I've been able to kind of align myself with really amazing people, you know, being Lane, being Brett, you know, Doug Miller, there's more. But when you spend time in close proximity to these people, you quickly realize what sets them apart. Most of them don't have an off switch. And that's kind of like how I credit myself. Like, my will to succeed far exceeds my failure to my worry about failure. I would rather work 23 hours a day than 8. Right. Like, so for me, it's more about tempering that desire to work. And I same thing with Brett. Whenever I spend time with Brett, I mean, the guy is, if he's not in the gym, he's reading research, he's talking to Brad Schoenfeld, they're talking about designing studies, he's working on some new equipment. People only see him posting a video with a Instagram girl with 3 million followers and they think, oh, that's what this guy does. No, there's a reason why girls with 3 million followers want to go to his gym. They're learning from the expert in the field. And so I think, especially when you see it from the outside looking in, it can seem strange. Like, who is this guy? But when you spend time with him, he is one of the most generous, passionate, hardworking humans you will ever spend a minute with. To the point where when I go to stay with Brett, like, because he lives pretty close to me, when I go stay with him for a couple of days, I try not to talk about work. I ask him about relationships. I ask him about his family, right? I try to talk about other stuff because it's so easy. I could just sit there and, hey, what do you think about this program style? What do you think about this exercise? And that's what he spends all his time doing. So I really tried. And the same thing with Lane. You know, Lane and I, you know, we just went to dinner for his birthday recently. It was in December. And we, you know, we sat there for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and we didn't talk about work at all. It was like life, relationships, you know, plans, goals, you know, and he's, you know, so for me, I never want to become someone that is using that relationship to like become something, right?
And yeah, it's never, first of all, from my exposure to you and in your name, it's never like that. It's just literally Lane waving you around and talking about you on a lot of stuff, right? And if, again, you mentioned Laura Conlon, I remember her name has been thrown around in those circles very extensively. I like that you mentioned Brad Schoenfeld. Brad is great. I mean, he's functioning on an incredibly high level in the research, very focused. And we spoke at an event together in Toronto, and his sister was also there. Melody is a very close friend of mine. She's wonderful. Love, love, love Melody. They're very smart people, very research-based, very highly educated. And Brad is a great guy. A number of times I've just gotten to sit down with him one-on-one, have dinner, breakfast or whatever at some event. And he's just great to be around. He's very thoughtful, very, very generous in that space. And I just love getting time with these kind of people in the industry. And coming up as a trainer, I never would have imagined that, you know, you get to sit down one-on-one multiple times with Brad Schoenfeld, this very iconic figure.
And yeah, I think people don't value the opportunity to go see people speak, especially in the United States. When we travel internationally and do events, they're very well attended and very grateful. Literally me and Lane have this running joke because he and I have done a bunch of seminars in the States all over the country. And there's this running joke that we have, like, we'll literally be like, okay, guys, we're hosting an event in Tampa, Florida on this date. And literally the first comment will be like, oh, cool. Can you come to Orlando?
It's like,
hey. We're like, we're bringing experts in from all over the world. Can you drive an hour? Maybe.
I was in Orlando a couple of years ago for an event that had a superstar lineup. Dan John, Molly Galbraith, Luca Hosevar, who else were? John Berardi was there. It was like just insane. Chris Duffin of Kabuki Strength, Brett Bartholomew. And so I looked at the dates, and there was also a Tool concert. I'm wearing a Tool shirt. And there was a Tool concert in Orlando 2 days after the event, and then another show in Tampa. So I said, well, shit, because travel was still a bit of a nuisance at the very beginning of 2022. We forget how recent this crap was. Coming out of Canada, big, big pain in the ass. So I said, screw it. I took me and my then girlfriend down for a week. And we actually drove. We watched the Tool concert in Orlando. And then the next morning drove to Tampa. God, it's like 2 hours, if that. And went to the aquarium in Tampa, which is incredible. Walked around the campus, which is really cool. Kind of like some old school European Harry Potter style stuff there. And went to the concert and drove back the next morning and caught a flight. Like, it, to me, if you have the industry experts in a city 2 hours drive away from you, like, what are you doing? Like, anytime there's anything in Calgary, 2.5-3 hours drive, I'm down there if there's something big going on there. It's crazy to me. And we hosted an event in Edmonton, and we were hoping to get good turnout from Calgary, and we only got a very small turnout. And people flew in from all over the US, but we didn't get the pull from Calgary. And it blows my mind. But again, I'm a big believer. We got to earn it. And I will continue to build relationships to get people to come to it. I'm not entitled to it.
Well, someone said to me years ago, his name's Joe from Australia. He said, content is king, but community is kingdom. And that always stuck with me because I think so many people are just focused on putting out content. But if you can get a decent community, decent size community, it just makes everything else so much easier. Like, they invest in you, you invest in them. That, I think, that interpersonal connection, you know, at least in my opinion, that's the one major change since I was young. There was a lot of, you know, looking people in the eye and handshakes. I don't know that that's the case. Maybe to a detriment, I don't know, but, you know.
I think social media kind of changes that a little bit. It changes the way that we interact with each other. Now, I relentlessly use social media. Anytime I get some, you know, an opportunity to connect, I'll give a really good example. So you probably have heard of Natalia Mello, right?
Of course, she won the Olympia.
She's an icon, right? Miss Bikini 2012, one of the earliest Olympia winners. And I remember her bodybuilding magazines. And one day, a couple of years ago, up pops Natalia Mello Wilson following me on Instagram. I'm like, well, shit, I know who Natalia is. Let's follow her back. I send her a message. We got to chatting a little bit. We became fast friends. She's really interested in evidence-based stuff. She's very immersed in like kind of this side of the industry as opposed to wanting to stay within like bikini competition. And they're not necessarily that they're unrelated. She just coaches kind of women and gen pop, but she'll show up to a lot of seminars. So I pulled her in to do a Teen Nation article with me. She did the video. She was great. And then this event that we had in Dallas last year, it's coming up again this February. And she lives near there. So I said, hey, just come out, hang out and meet everybody. So she did, got introduced her to a whole bunch of people. And then now this year, she's going to be speaking on a panel there because of this effort. And Natalia's incredible. We chat all the time. Really, really smart, savvy, successful person. And her backstory coming out of Brazil is really cool. I've had her on the podcast. Anyone wants to go listen, please like scroll through. You'll find this episode. And I love that about social media, but I think it's, you have to approach it with abundance mindset, pulling her into a major publication and sharing her with, hey, this is an event I speak at, right? And there's not always an automatic, hey, invite to come back, limited spots. And there have been situations where I've created introductions and happily, I mean, there were events that I didn't get invited back to, but someone I'd introduced to the organizer was on the next year's thing. And I smile and I say, I'm really glad I created that opportunity for that person. I never go, shit, I lost something because I shared with someone else, because I get more opportunities that way.
Yeah, I'm the same way. And that's, I always try to give more value than I get from someone. I mean, that's, it's kind of how my content is run. I, you know, basically I'm just answering questions for people. I've just learned how to put a social media clickbait spin on things. So the topics seem a little bit more interesting than they actually are. But yeah, I, you know, I learned early on that, you know, I love Gary Vee for it, because he used to talk about, you know, doing micro things to for macro growth. And, you know, answering the question for one person doesn't seem like it's going to provide a lot of value. But the thing is, if someone has that question and they're sending it to you, there's probably thousands of people that have the same question that just aren't messaging you. Mm-hmm. So when you put a topic out on the internet, people can just find it and learn from it. That builds that community.
Well, that very story is how Jordan Syed ended up coaching Gary Vaynerchuk. Have you ever heard the story? Yep.
Oh yeah. I've been following Gary since before Jordan. Actually, he had a coach before Jordan that I followed.
Mike Vedrondi.
Yeah, Mike. Yeah.
So. And that's how it happened. Jordan wrote this, what he considers in retrospect, this shitty article for his website that he didn't think anybody read. Turns out this guy, he didn't know, was an accountant at the time, Mike Vacanti, happened to read it. And then later on, Mike ends up as Gary Vee's trainer. And then when Mike is ready to be done, he actually messages Jordan, and he was the connection. So what you describe is literally something that turned into an opportunity that changed Jordan Syed's life. And one of the things about Jordan is, and he's the poster child for this, he's never been afraid to create, to share, to put up media. I have a social media post literally today about this. And it's, there are so many coaches out there who are afraid of what people say, afraid of the criticism. And number one, we're frustrated because the industry is so full of shitheads and charlatans pumping out garbage. But if you're sitting on the sidelines and you're not willing to take up a bit of that space, you're just leaving that space for other people. And like you said, there is somebody, even if your media is quite small, there is someone in your world who needs what you have to say. They need it today. It will help them, and it will probably continue to bring other people. And when you and I met, we follow each other on social media, and you and I both have pretty darn big followings. But it started out with small, and it started out with just chipping away, and it gained traction over time as more people plugged into that message because we showed up.
Yeah, you told me to do more text-based posts, and I did a text-based post like a few weeks later, and it was my most shared post ever.
Boom, right?
And I haven't done another one, so
Jesus. But
for me, social media is so far down the totem pole of like my responsibilities. I'm operating at such a high level as a coach that really the only time I make a social media post is when I'm like in my work and I see something and I'm like, I gotta tell people about this.
Sure.
I gotta tell people about this situation. This is not normal. People need to know that this is how prep can work or whatever. So yeah, I realize I probably should post more, but it's, for me, it's more of a, it's a true representation of where my emotions or thoughts are at that moment. It's not this planned out thing.
No. And so I'll kind of explain a phenomenon that in the past, so Joel Jameson is someone who I applied this to. And then my friend Jonathan Goodman, who most people know, he's been on the podcast a bunch of times. Jonathan was never serious about social media. And then one day he was. And he messaged me and he messaged Jordan Syatt and knew our tactics and said, hey, I want to talk to you about strategy. So, but Joel Jameson is very well known in strength and conditioning, especially in the UFC, MMA world. And then Jonathan is huge in the personal training world. And what ended up happening was just that text-based style is very shareable, very socially approved. You're giving people social capital that they can go to their people and go, oh, look, this is great. This aligns with what I believe. I'm going to share this. So what happens is there's so much grace and capital built up in the name Joel Jameson, people who've gone to his seminars, read his book, etc. Jonathan Goodman read his books, and Paul Ravella, because you are there and prominent in that evidence-based space. But a lot of people, because they haven't seen a media format that gets shared around, they just didn't think the top of their head, I'm going to go and like look for Paul Ravella today and follow him on social media. But if your people are already there, start sharing things that are like, oh my God, this is great. I need to share this with people. It, what it ends up doing is it'll soak up all these people who know who you are, just happened not to have been plugged into your social media. And that's what happened with both Jonathan and with Joel. And we saw very, very large rises in their social media presence very quickly, because they also applied, they took this volume of knowledge and wisdom and just turned it into this little bite-sized chunk that then can lead people to articles and books and resources and coaching programs and whatever else. So that's something that I'm a big believer in, the social media savvy side of stuff for growth, but I'm also a big believer in accumulating what I call career capital, which is the legacy of your reputation, your work, your long-term resources, all the public speaking appearances, all the written article stuff, everywhere you've been featured. Lane's a great example of having concurrently done both really well, right? Lane's very savvy with social media, but he's also built this giant foundation of educational resources. Like I said, I first found him, I think, through Twitter is where I think he came from. And a lot of it was probably bodybuilding.com, but then I got into his YouTube, and that's where I really got hooked, because he had all this great stuff on his old video logs.
Yeah, his YouTube videos were very raw. And at the time on YouTube, that was very refreshing. They were longer format, just deep dives into topics that people weren't really talking much about, like reverse dieting or metabolic damage. I remember that metabolic damage. He was actually living in Tampa when he put that video out, and he told me within like a week or two, he had multiple thousands of client inquiries. Oh, he had to shut off. He had to shut off his email, because, you know, that was back when he was just like, just email me for coaching. There was no website. So he showed me his email, and it was literally thousands of people. I'm like, what are you going to do? He's like, nothing. I can't even answer my client emails. Now I have to worry about this. So he was actually stressed out when he would put a video out. He would stress and be like, oh my gosh. I at the time was like, Lane, you don't understand the value. In my industry, that's called a lead. You've got thousands of leads right there. People will buy those. Oh, I don't trust anybody. He's like, you should take them. And I'm like, no. So like, that's eventually how my coaching business got started, is I became one of his like referral resources.
So this is a flawless transition into where I want to go with this, because you built a team, right? And I guess one of the things I was sort of going to talk about, and we can hit on the longevity aspect of your career. And I was going to say, like, you know, what has been the key to your sustainability and longevity, so that you never had to grow up and get a real job, but you actually came from the grown up real job and you went into coaching. But let's look at it from this angle. Like, you built that team of coaches. So was there ever a time you didn't want to hire anybody? Were there any sort of like limiting beliefs about that? You know, because me, I don't have any employees, and I have an emotional bottleneck there. And I think there's a lot of legitimate and maybe semi-dubious things, messaging from business mentors saying, oh, you got to scale, you got to grow. And the way I look at it is like, you know, I know these people with seven-figure businesses, but they also have like the same level of seven-figure expense. And my six-figure income is probably at a significant net margin, more significant net margin than a lot of these people with these seven-figure businesses. But that's also not an argument to say, hey, don't hire anybody, don't scale. So why did you decide to build the team? And are there any unseen challenges or dynamics that are just kind of interesting, pros and cons of it?
Yeah, so I think for me, doing everything myself was probably something I really enjoyed early on. You know, there's a phase of where you're coaching where, you know, yeah, you've got 30, 40, 50 clients, and, you know, that keeps you pretty busy. but you've also got a lot of downtime, right? So what works is when you're not busy with clients, you've got time for content. You've got time to podcast. Guess what that creates? More client opportunities. Guess what happens when you have less time to do that stuff? Your client list ebbs and flows, right? And so what I found was that I enjoyed doing all those things. When it really got tricky was when I decided to go back to school. I went back to USF to study exercise science. My wife and I just had a baby boy. And so I was spending a lot of times doing things that I didn't need to do, like answering inquiries, like sending invoices, like booking travel hotels. You know, I ran a bodybuilding show at that time. So a lot answering emails from, you know, customer service type stuff. So my first hire was literally just a person to help me manage. Like, I would literally say, like, can you just go get me a sandwich? I would say, hey, man, can you sweep the garage? Because I got a new Rogue power rack coming in. Help me put that together. Can you go to the post office? Because I had some clients order some shirts and they need to be shipped. Like, you don't realize, like, all these tasks just take up like tiny, it's like death by a thousand slices. And before you know it, you're working 18 hours and you're not making any more money because you're just trying to keep up. That first hire was a game changer for me because it was the first time that I realized like, oh, you can pay somebody 15, 20 bucks an hour and get $100 an hour back. My time spent talking to clients, being at shows, that's where my value is. That's where I make my money. I don't make money going to the post office. And then also just having a bit of personal time. So there was never a goal of building a team. I was actually, to my knowledge, the first person to do that. I had approached Lane about it. I said, Lane, you're getting hundreds of inquiries every week. You don't even really love coaching. That wasn't where his passion was. His passion was like the dissemination of information, but the coaching was undeniable. People were paying him incredible sums of money to coach them. I said, let me just come work for you. I've got a master's degree in business. I've got a background in IT. I've got a passion for this stuff. You know what he said? No, start your own business. I'll help you grow it. I was like, okay. You know, and my wife has a background in banking. So I think I just had the right pedigree to kind of go out on my own. Mm. But I still tell Lane to this day, had he hired me, he would be bigger than Weight Watchers by now. Because, you know, he took his eye off the ball of coaching and focus on other things, and things kind of fell apart. Now he's rebuilt everything back up. But Lane is not going to be outworked. Like, that dude just is going to work. He's going to find a way to succeed. Whereas I think I have a lot of business acumen that's allowed me to succeed. So what I started realizing was I reached a point where I was getting to where Lane was after a couple of years. I was full of clients and I was getting hundreds of inquiries. And that's the first time I thought, oh, I wonder if I should hire a coach. And of course I chose somebody that I met while going back to school that, you know, we just kind of had a bond. And I thought, man, this guy's got something. He's smart and he's funny, passionate. Oddly enough, we both at one point worked in a restaurant, and I don't know why, but people that work in restaurants, they're just good people. Like, when you've worked in a restaurant, you've been treated a certain way. You know how to treat people. You've got customer service skills, those soft skills. They're just valuable.
You can't teach them. My pal Don Saladino, he grew up working in like banquet hall restaurant type style stuff. And he's a tremendous success in the industry. And again, someone you can't outwork. What you said about Lane, it's interesting because he definitely went the huge personal brand road. Right. And that's obviously massively high leverage right now because he's getting on the biggest podcasts and he's talking to people like Peter Attia, and he's been on Rogan, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not crazy.
Not on Rogan, but I mean, he's walking in some circles now where, like, he told me the other day, he's like, I'm not going to say the celebrity's name is coming to town. Do you want to come hang out? And I was like, are you serious? Like, you're hanging out with those people now? So he's actually hanging out with like A and B list Hollywood people.
Well, he's really close friends with Dax Shepard and
Kristen Bell.
They're local, right? Yeah.
Tom Segura. Yeah. So he's just some really cool people. And I mean, because of him, I've gotten to meet some amazing people. I remember one year he was the announcer for the Olympia. So, and his wife was pregnant at the time. So he said, hey man, do you want to go with me? You'll be my like plus one for the weekend. And I was like, I didn't know what that meant. But I got all these media passes. So I was meeting like Ronnie Coleman and Jay Cutler. Like, you know, to me, this was like meeting superstars. But then he's like, we're going to go to a comedy show tonight. What's the really tall comedian and the quiet guy? What's their names? Gosh, I'm blanking. They've been in Vegas for like 25 years.
Penn and Teller.
Penn and Teller. He's like, yeah, I'm the guy, you know, Penn Jillette has been messaging me. We're going to go to a show tonight. After the show, he calls us back to the dressing room. So it's me, my wife, Lane, hanging out with Penn and Jillette. Just the five of us. I'm like, what is happening right now? So that's the kind of stuff that happens with Lane.
That is incredible. That's fun. Try to grab my thoughts here. Oh, so I think there's kind of a couple of pathways we see this stuff. So I mentioned Mike Isertel, Nick Shaw earlier. Those are the guys who turned around and they started building the company a little earlier. And so they built a lot of infrastructure, which became Renaissance Periodization. Now, Mike, brand-wise, is a major driver of that, but RP is its own giant juggernaut of a vehicle. John Berardi and Precision Nutrition, probably the original in that space in a lot of ways. The model, and obviously building that up to what it was at the point where like he could literally step away and sell it. Another friend of mine, I don't know if you're familiar with Mike Dola. Mike's a great guy. He built Stronger You, really big nutrition coaching company. And eventually Anytime Fitness just rolled up and said, listen, we'd like to buy this from you. So he's now like in his mid-30s, raising his kids, like semi-retired, wants to figure out something again, but just did a great job of customer service and scaled this monster. Another buddies of mine are the guys behind Macros Inc., which does really well. These are these companies that have stepped out and they're more of the brand is less reliant on the individuals, the face of it. Yes, Berardi and Mike Isertel are certainly at their, you know, at relevant periods of time, very much the face of these companies, but these companies grew into something much larger that was bigger than those people's brands. So interesting pathway that I think a lot of different people could go to. And I find this stuff fascinating and looking at the pros and the cons of the different things. And knowing Lane's personality, I don't think Lane could ever step away from being the face and the figurehead of anything he did because he's just so instrumental to it.
Yeah, I mean, his business is built on his name, you know, BioLane. So yeah, he's always been the focus of it. It's actually why I chose to name my company Pro Physique, because I kind of thought, okay, if I call it, you know, most coaches are like, you know, their name is based on the business. And I thought, no, I don't want that. I want it to be based on the merit of the company. So yeah, I kind of saw through that. Yeah, I mean, there are so many pathways, and honestly, you can just start down one, figure out what's working for you and adjust. And I think that's especially nowadays, it's one of the benefits of having a master's degree in business is that you learn these kind of how quickly business can change. And sometimes it's not the biggest company that succeeds. It's the most flexible. It's the one that can adapt the quickest, pay attention to the trends, avoid the threats and kind of just move through that noise. And that's really what's happened with the internet. Like, you know, my business 15 years ago could not have existed. I would need an entire TV studio to put out a video on a TV station. Now I can, if I want to, shoot a video with my phone, upload it from my phone, make a thumbnail on my phone, share it to the internet, reply to people on my phone. Like, you can build an empire off this now, like if you're so inclined. So I think it's opened it up more to a meritocracy of who has the most passion, who has the best information, and who is doing the best things. Because if you're not a good person, success is going to expose you, right? And that's, so this is where you see, you know, you'll see people rise real quick. And I always go, mm-mm. People that go from zero to like driving Bugattis in a year, something's about to happen.
That's usually they don't own that.
I want the slow climb, man.
And I've been of that mindset too. I've long said that if you could give me, and I mean this, like there's people who like literally would want 1 million followers tomorrow. And the quote status that comes with that. I think there's a lot of people who crave status within the industry. You don't give off any of that energy at all. You never have. And if someone said to me, you could have 1 million followers tomorrow, real followers. Yes, there could be a ton of benefit there, but I wouldn't want it at that pace. It would be overwhelming. It would be too much. And I am really enjoying the growth as it is because followers are just one thing. Now, there's people who get really negative about social media following. It's like, I think that's a limiting belief because you can reach a lot of people. Real people are interested in your stuff. You can do a few things. One is you can educate them. Two, you can direct them to your resources and you can earn a great livelihood off of that. You can direct them to other people you like and trust who are doing great things and support those people, create opportunities. And I like that. But I'm not interested in numbers as a status metric or vanity metric. And I think that's a lens that a lot of people get caught up in. But I wouldn't be ready to handle what.
Well, I think it's a lot. It's social currency, you know, like
sure it is.
We're standing around a circle, even at the Olympia, you know, you and I all know that Brett has a million followers or whatever, but what's more important to me is that Brett's actually trying to impact those followers a certain way. And so he's earned that. So I have no jealousy over Brett's followers or you know, someone like Jeff Nippard, who puts out a lot of YouTube content. But if you ever watch a Jeff Nippard video, you know, I've actually talked to him about this before. Those take him an immense amount of time. They're like TV documentaries. So good luck if you want to be Jeff Nippard. Do you actually want to be Jeff Nippard, or do you just want 4 million subs on YouTube?
Mm-hmm.
So I know what it takes to be Jeff Nippard. I don't want that. Like, I don't want to put that much effort into my YouTube videos, because I'm putting that Jeff Nippard YouTube energy into my clients, right? That's why I was at 40 something shows this year. That's why, you know, I'm trying to be the best coach. But so, yeah, I've never really, the numbers to me, what's more important is that there's just growth. The minute things stop growing or evolving, that's when I would be more concerned. Okay, something's going wrong here. Because to grow on social media, you have to pay attention to what is working. I've even met people before that are like, yeah, I have 100,000 subscribers on my YouTube, but it stopped growing because YouTube hates my channel now. And I'm like, let me go check out your channel. Okay, so eight years ago, you were posting videos, and it's 10 years, 8 years later, and you're posting the same exact video, the same editing, the same audio, the same faraway shots. You're not doing good thumbnails. I'm like, YouTube has evolved. It's a lot more competitive, but you haven't. So it's not YouTube that hates your content. It's people are watching it, clicking it, turning it off. And YouTube goes, okay, people don't like this stuff. We're not going to push it out. So you've got to, you know, whatever your, I promise you, Jeff Nippard could give us a PhD level class on YouTube analytics and how to grow. I could too. I pay very close attention. He's probably light years ahead of me, but that's why I have so much respect for Jeff, because like when I watch his videos, they make me mad, because I'm like, damn, you know, I have a video editor that works with me, and I'll be like, we'll watch like a 10 second clip, and I'll be like, what do you think this looks like in Final Cut? Like, I don't know if you use Final Cut, but you like when you add something, it stacks it on top. Mm. And I'm like, his Final Cut must look insane by the time he's done. Because he's got things moving and sound and clips and, you know.
And as a one-man show, like, as much as I love the idea, and I determined to play around with more with YouTube, and I am actually at some point going to start putting these episodes up, but more out of the habit of getting consistent with YouTube, but writing for various publications, trying to...
Yeah.
Coach full time in person, I face bottlenecks, and I look like I use Nippert as an example of someone who very substantially grew a large brand through YouTube, is probably the primary vehicle early and still is a big driver for him. You got me thinking as well, like you put that level of effort into things, makes me think of like Greg Knuckles and Adam Ali of Physiconomics in terms of their writing articles. You go read one of their articles, these things are a mini book. Right. Each one of their articles really feels like
that's how Lane started. So Lane used to try to get me to write articles. I just realized very quickly I absolutely hate writing fitness stuff. So, you know, my thought was, okay, what do I like doing? I flipped on the camera and I just felt at home. Some people flip on the camera and they're just monotone. And you give me a camera, I could probably do the news tonight. Like, it does not faze me. So yeah, you got to do the thing. And I wrote articles. There's probably some still out there from, gosh, bodybuilding.com, you know, because Lane gives you the approval, and the person's like, yeah, you can write us an article. This is the topic. Lane was prolific at writing articles. So, I mean, but that's the thing. I think you got to find the thing that seems the least effort for you.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that was YouTube.
And I'm the writer with that. It's like funny, like you put me up on stage, boom, good to go. In front of camera, not so much. It's weird, but I'm also open to the all right, I've got to learn some of these skills, and I'm much, much better at not setting limiting beliefs. I like how you're very clear on what you're good at, what you like doing, and your willingness to invest in having good people around you to support you. There's a lot of really good lessons here, and I'm really grateful to hear this stuff from you. Where can people go and check out more of your stuff? I mean, obviously your YouTube channel.
Yeah, I mean, YouTube and Instagram are my two primary platforms for putting anything out. Our website, prophysique.com, has a lot of resources, including we run a transformation challenge twice a year. That starts in February of this year. We give away $25,000 with that. Wow. So any type of contact you want to have with me, you can direct message me. I tend to get back to most people. That's probably the easiest way, or just going through the website.
And there's a big one too, and referring to kind of not wanting to go to a million followers overnight. I still value responding to every person that messages me. And I try to do so in a very thoughtful manner. And I really believe that's one of the highest leverage behaviors. One-to-one, it may not feel that impactful, but you send a voice message or a video message, or just a thoughtful response to someone who took the time because they chose you out of all the options on the internet, the growing array of options. It's pretty special. It's a really great way. You theoretically have a warm lead, but you have an engaged follower. And a lot of really great stuff has come out of this. I've got a lot of podcast invitations because of this sort of thing. So I believe the payoff is very, very high if you can prioritize and create the room for it. I think at Lane's scale right now with his media, it probably gets impossible for him. Lord knows
Lane's very abrupt with people typically. Like, he's not, you know, in person he's good, but I think he almost assumes people are going to attack him online. So like I've seen him attack people that were just being nice, and he was like, oh shit, my bad. Same with Brett. You know, I've looked at Brett's, you know, DMs before. Like, he'll have like 1,000.
Yeah.
Like, you can't possibly respond.
He was telling us this when we were talking at the Olympia. He was talking about how he cannot. There was a point where he just declared bankruptcy when it came to DMs. He's just like, I can't do it anymore. And that's part of the reason why it's easy to say, because there's very little chance that I would ever have a situation where I would wake up with, you know, an additional 850,000 followers in the space of a week. Nothing goes that viral. But, you know, I was featured on Arnold Schwarzenegger's email newsletter. And so I posted up on my story and tagged Arnold, and it got shared through Arnold's story. And guess what? That didn't drive follower growth. So it takes something miraculous in order to see that kind of level of growth. But speaking of growth, everybody listening, thank you for being a part of this. Please go follow Paul. Go check out what he's doing. I was excited when I realized it was Paul Ravella in front of me at the Olympia. I was quite excited and honored to meet you. And you've been nothing short of spectacular, humble, gracious, and thank you for coming on. And so I get to continue to have amazing guests like Paul because you guys are listening. So I want to grow this podcast even more this year. You know, it's been 6 years of doing this. It's been awesome. Message me if you're a regular listener, but take this episode, share it with someone in your world who you know would really benefit from it, and or give me a great review if you haven't yet done it. Those are those little free gifts that go a long way. And go hit follow on what Paul's doing. If you're really interested in YouTube, you know, it's obvious he does this at a very high level. You can go learn lessons from it, even if you're not necessarily the ideal client and don't want to do a bikini show. Guys, my guess is you probably aren't going to become a bikini competitor with Paul.
Well, so there's this weird dichotomy with my content, Andrew. My YouTube content is more based around men, fat loss, muscle building.
Funny.
My Instagram content is 100% around my coaching, because I've still got this. Yeah, that's what's really taken off on YouTube. So I actually started a second YouTube channel called Pro Physique Studio. That's where I post my bikini content, our podcasts and stuff. So I just found that it was very confusing for the one audience to get bikini videos the day after they got a fat loss video. So
fair. And that's smart too, right? So there are lessons here. So go and check out what Paul's doing, because you'll learn lessons for your career side of things as well. So Paul, again, thank you. You've been amazing. Everybody listening, thank you.